This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Show's about to get a whole lot smarter. 4:18 the time. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. We have a certain level of intellect between us, but when we add to the program ESPN's Buster Olney, now we really know what we're talking about. Great baseball reporter from ESPN joins us now here on 97.3 The Fan. How are you, Buster? Good to talk to you again, sir.
Good to talk with you guys, too. The last time that we talked, it was toward the end of January. Chris had just written a thing about, well, here's how Manny Machado might fit or Bryce Harper might fit. And we were talking about that, and it was a lot of hope and a lot. And then I think I at the end was like, nah, but we know in the end they won't do it. But I remember that conversation as soon as word broke that they were in on it. So you guys apparently inspired something.
Well, we told this completely differently, and the way we told it was that you were the one that mentioned Manny Machado might be coming to the Padres, and we believed you, and you turned out to be right. So we've been giving you all the credit.
We're all being good teammates here, right?
Right.
Being good teammates.
That's right. We're all in the same club. So now the next one is Madison Bumgarner, and
yes.
Obviously, it is definitely obvious the Giants are going to trade Madison Bumgarner. What makes you think the Padres would be a good and perfect destination were that to come about?
What I'm hearing from other teams that will be involved in this market, because I just basically sent out a bunch of texts over the last few days and asked the question, hey, where do you think this is going to wind up heading? And let's face it, this is a little bit like the Machado thing back in January. It's a long-range forecast, and the feedback I'm getting the question, of course, is which team could potentially be motivated and which team has the prospects to get him. And a bunch of people were getting back, yep, Padres probably would be viewed as the early front runner. You know, the Astros may be a team involved. The Brewers have the motivation, maybe not the prospects. Other contenders might be involved. But here's another factor I think really is important for this year, is that you've got a new head of baseball ops with the Giants, and Farhan Zaidi, who I think operates, sets aside all the old school feeling that you don't trade a great player within your division to a division rival. I mean, when he was working under Billy Beane in Oakland, they didn't care who they traded with. Their feeling was, look, we just want access to the best possible prospects. And we don't, if it's a division rival, whatever. Our feeling is that we'd probably weaken the division rival by taking a couple of their best prospects in a trade. And so I don't think Farhan will blink at all if he feels like that the best offer he gets on Bumgarner comes from the Padres. And you guys know this. I mean, among all farm systems, in terms of depth, in terms of quality, the Padres are at a competitive disadvantage when you're talking about making trade for pitching.
Yeah. ESPN's Buster Olney joins us here on the SDCCU fan hotline. Buster, the Padres have somewhat of a dilemma, which is why we're even talking about Madison Bumgarner, right? They have an extremely young pitching staff. A lot of these guys are going to be on some type of innings limitation. And how do you think the Padres handle that, especially as it pertains to Chris Paddock, right? Because he's off to an amazing start so far, and he's going up against Clayton Kershaw tonight. Does this have the potential to end up like a Steven Strasburg type thing where they shut him down and that's it? There's no more pitching for him.
I don't think they'll do that, but I do think that they potentially have that vortex in front of them, and I really hope that they work to avoid that during the year. And that to me means getting a handle on it right now. Because when you look at his career high, as you guys I'm sure have discussed, in professional innings is 90. Teams usually won't go more than 40 or 50 more from one year to the next when they're dealing with young pitchers. And so that means as we sit here today, he's got 40-plus innings, throws another 6-7 tonight. That means that for the rest of the year, if in fact they subscribe to that formula, and then that's generally accepted within the industry, he'd have about 90 innings left for the rest of the year.
Wow.
That's like 15 starts, 15 six-inning starts. So how do you deal with that? Now, You know, I've asked around to people around baseball today, look, would you ever just, knowing the Padres are a team of promise and you want to make sure that Paddock's okay at the end of the year, would you think about shutting a guy down in midseason? Just say, look, go take a summer vacation for 6 weeks, and then we'll ramp you back up at the end of the year. And I get back, no, that's not something that you're going to see teams do. What they could do is, you know, give him, skip him a start, skip him another start, try to pull the reins back on him. My concern about the Strasburg thing, and this goes beyond innings, because you guys remember what happened the year that they did that, the Nationals did that with Steven. It wasn't only about the fact that he wasn't available at the end of the year for the postseason, but the conversation afterward among players about Steven, was, you know, why didn't this guy push his way through? That guy's a, you know, wimp. It's his career. He should have driven it. And I feel like as someone, you know, who's covered his whole career, that has hung on him.
No doubt.
And it's, and his reputation. And so I feel like the Padres need to work to protect Paddock from that type of situation, get a plan in place, make sure that he's available the end of the year, because you don't want a situation where he's running out of innings in mid-September the way that it happened with the Nationals in Strasburg.
Buster Olney, always great stuff from ESPN, joining us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Could the Padres conceivably, and it's an interesting name I'm bringing up now because he's involved in something else today, and that's Julio Urias of the Dodgers. But we talked with some Dodger people, and they said, you know, and rather than pitch him as a starter and keep his innings down, they just moved him to the bullpen and have him throwing like 3-4 innings a game, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th inning. And that's worked for the Dodgers. Now, again, this latest situation with Urias, we'll see how that plays out. But is that a solution to Chris Paddock, where you would maybe take him out of the starting role and put him like in a 6th, 7th inning role?
You could theoretically. And it's not only him, as you guys know. I mean, you know, Anthony, you referenced it at the top about, you know, Strom and other. They have a really young pitching staff. And so they're going to be doing this dance with several guys.
Yeah.
During the course of this year, and whether it's in a bullpen session or, a bullpen role for a period of time, or just pulling the reins back, they're going to have to be dealing with that during the year, which is why, you know, when we talk about making trades, I feel like, and I, you know, reported this yesterday, Giants are open for business right now. The expectation is that he probably won't be traded until right after the amateur draft, which is 3 weeks away. But you can make an offer right now. The Toronto Blue Jays, Marcus Stroman, and Aaron Sanchez, they're available right now. And if you're the Padres and you're looking at, you know, this sort of looming situation with your young pitchers, it probably would be great for them to build in some veteran depth and get one or two guys who can come in and help out with that inning and help with the management that they're going to have to deal with these young starters.
Buster, we were talking about Madison Bumgarner and the Padres being, you wrote today that the Padres would be the number one, at least right now, it seems like they would be the number one destination. What about a guy like Dallas Keuchel? Because everything we know about A.J. Preller is that he's more likely, at least in my opinion, to go out and sign a guy on a prorated season like Dallas Keuchel versus Madison Bumgarner, where you're going to have to give up something to get him. Is Keuchel at all in this conversation?
And I got to be honest, you know, the other day I had a conversation with Gio Gonzalez in the Brewers Clubhouse. I was surprised the Padres didn't jump at him.
I was too.
Given where the price was, I thought he would have been an absolutely perfect fit. He signed like $2 million. He's pitched great for the Brewers so far. And you're right, you know, Keuchel is an option. I will tell you that he intends to be a lot more expensive than where Gio was at the end.
I imagine.
At the beginning of the last offseason, Scott Boras asked teams, when teams checked in on Keuchel last December, he was asking teams 6 or 7 years, $25 to $30 million a year. So he basically was looking at a David Price, Max Scherzer type contract. And teams heard that and said, no, thank you. They hung up the phone and moved on to, you know, the Nathan Eovaldis and Jay Happs and guys like that. Now, Dallas' situation has changed since then. I suspect that he's going to wait until after the June draft to sign, because then he won't be tethered to draft pick compensation. But at some point, like Dallas is a great guy, you know, he's been a terrific pitcher. If I were a close friend, I'd say, Dad, you got to pitch.
Yeah.
Like, you need to sign and pitch. And the last offer that I know of to Keuchel The Astros offered 1 year at $15 million or 2 years at $24 million, and that was not close to what he was looking for. And, you know, you wonder which team would be out there on that sort of thing. And I also think, you know, I mentioned Bumgarner, I mentioned Stroman, I mentioned Aaron Sanchez. I also think Trevor Bauer is going to be an option in the trade market this summer, regardless of whether or not the Indians are in contention, because they're looking to manage their payroll moving forward. And again, we know that the Indians from last summer, the Indians and Padres can trade, and the Indians would love to draw on the Padres' great wealth of prospects.
Great stuff, Buster. I just want to ask one last thing. We got a couple seconds left. If the Padres were to pull off some kind of deal and they went after a Bumgarner or one of these other guys and made a trade, what would it cost them, or what the kind of package would they have to put together in order to do it?
At least one high-end prospect. Maybe for a Bumgarner, a good blueprint would be the Yankees and Cubs trade from a few years ago, when the Cubs got Aroldis Chapman to be the piece to help them win the World Series. If you remember, that's how they got Gleyber Torres. I think that the Padres, for basically a three-and-a-half-month rental for Bumgarner, at least one major prospect, a couple of guys around the edges.
All right. Well, that's it's going to happen. Because Buster, he's always right.
He's spot on.
He's spot on. And you know what
you
I like about him better?
Right.
Is that he's right, and then he gave us the credit. I love this guy. Buster, thanks so much for the
Thank
time,
you, Buster.
Man. Great, we'll catch up with you soon. Yep. Good talking to you. Buster Olney there from ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Can't wait to talk about golf, but first we're going to talk about getting hit by pitches.
Number five.
Because it's never been more dangerous to be a major league hitter, apparently. Through last Thursday's game, batters have been hit by 457 pitches. It's not really that crazy that they've been hit so many times, but people are wondering why it's happening. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know what's going on over here. Considering MLB pitchers are throwing harder than any time in history, so the current rate of .41 batters hit by a pitch per team game is the highest since 1900, the same year that the Brooklyn Super Boss, led by Wee Willie Keeler, won the Chronicle Telegraph Cup. So, Tony, you can laugh. It's okay. What's wrong?
Nothing. Go ahead. Finish your
question. Right. Chris, why do you think hit by pitches are up in baseball?
Because there's a bunch of guys throwing 100 miles an hour and they don't know where the hell it's going.
That's a good answer.
Okay. Then I'll just stop there then.
That is the answer. When baseball decided to go young, that means that there were going to be less guys spending the amount of time in the minor leagues that they used to. And in that, you perhaps are giving up some development of control and command of the baseball from a pitching standpoint. And they're teaching guys basically to redline. And I just, when I say that, I want you to think of your car and think of running that car in the red, like, all the time. Every time you get in it, you run it red. How long do you think that car will last?
Not long.
It's not going to last long. That's why injuries are up. Hit by pitches are up. I think it's all correlated to the game getting younger.
All right. Do you think it has anything to do with, the macho stance of players nowadays and establishing the plate and, you know, the new age of baseball? Or do you think it's honestly just what we said?
I think it's honestly just that, because I think more hitters, I think it's actually the opposite. Like, they don't establish the ball in.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's
they
why.
They can't throw in,
that's
because
why,
otherwise they hit you.
Well, that's why. Yeah, exactly. And that's why hitters are more comfortable, which why we see more guys getting hit in the face than we've ever seen. Because when you have no fear of the pitch in and everything is going to be away, you tend to start diving down there.
Well, the other thing is you now have an ear flap, which you didn't have before. You now have an arm guard. You have leg guards. You have hip. You're basically coming up there with a suit of armor on. So, yeah, getting hits, not as painful as it once was either.
I mean, the arm guards have been going on for a while. I mean, even back to Barry Bonds.
Barry Bonds was...
He had the mechanical arm, right?
He did.
But I think comfort, and even in those days, though, at least you were wearing it because guys like Roger Clemens were like, they were establishing the ball in. Now that's not the case. I mean, guys are wearing the face strap because so many guys have been hitting the face recently.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think it's all has to do with the game getting younger.
It's bad pitching.
I was watching softball the other day, and the pitcher has to wear a mask out there. And
no,
I know
they
that,
don't have to.
Oh, they don't have to. Mm-hmm. Oh, but all
some
all
of
the,
them do.
Okay, all the girls that I saw, they were wearing the mask and everything, so I just assumed they had to. But
some of them do.
When do you think that would ever be a part of the game of baseball to have a pitcher wear a mask or something?
I have a hard time seeing it. These guys don't even want to wear the protective hat.
Yeah,
that
the big donut thing.
That makes you look a little crazy.
It
out
does
there.
Make you look
so
crazy.
I can imagine that would. And that part is the macho part, right? Is guys, whether they want to admit it or not, they don't. They want to look a certain way out there, and if they can't look that way, they'd rather, you know, they'd rather look good out there.
College softball players wear helmets with face guards, mm-hmm. like you know,
yeah.
and, you know,
like
face masks. They could ask Major League ball players to do that, but they would turn that down also.
Number four.
The PGA Championship is happening about 3 months early, and one former winner is going to be doing something different this week. 53-year-old John Daly is a former PGA Championship winner, so he gets a spot in the event, but he was granted an okay from the PGA to use a golf cart, which is not allowed in regular tour events. Daly said he recently had the meniscus taken out of his knee, and he also suffers from osteoarthritis, making it difficult to walk down hills. And a lot of the professional golfers in the field are not a fan of this because it's a long, hilly walk at Bethpage Black in New York. Here's Tiger Woods commenting about this during his presser today.
As far as JD taking the cart, well, I walked with a broken leg, so.
So he was pretty much saying, suck it up, wimp. Tony, do you think there is anything wrong with John Daly using a golf cart in this event?
Why does he have a cart?
Because he can't walk. It's hard for him to walk.
He said
he got his meniscus taken out of his knee, and he also has arthritis.
Well, I mean, most people, when you have surgery, like, you have to take some time off, and you, like...
Yeah, he's obviously healthy enough to hit a golf ball.
Yes, I have a problem. Answer your question, I have a problem with it.
If no one else is allowed
to. If no one else is allowed to, and he doesn't have, like, a... There was a player who was granted.
It was Casey Martin.
And he had like a,
he had a degenerative
disease, right?
And yeah. It caused a big uproar
it did.
On the PGA Tour.
You
took it to court.
I was okay with that one because that was, I mean, a meniscus tear. I mean, that's, everybody playing could get a meniscus tear.
I think John Daly's lifestyle
that doesn't help.
Bad wheel.
So yeah, I kind of feel some type of way about John Daly being a ride a cart.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, I just think in John Daly's case, he has to have a place to keep his six-pack of beer and his M&Ms and his Diet Cokes and his cigarettes. So cart makes sense for John. He can't carry all that stuff around in his bag.
My grandpa played with John Daly a golf game because he did business with one of his sponsors. So John Daly drank 24 Diet Cokes on the golf course and smoked two packs of cigarettes in 18 holes.
Like I said, he's got to have a cart.
Yeah.
He needs an ashtray. He's got to, you know.
Cooler.
It's important for John Daly. No, I obviously agree with Tony. If you're healthy enough to play, then you're going to have to play. And if you have a degenerative condition like Casey Martin, then it's okay to use a golf cart. And I, you know, think that's an old story, but it's still, I still think it was all right for him to use one, but not John Daly.
John Daly is going to get wrecked by this golf course.
Number three.
Tough. The NBA draft lottery is a very different process compared to the other major sports leagues. It all comes down to how many ping pong balls you put in the machine. So even though you don't have the worst record in the NBA, you could get the first overall pick. It's unlikely, but it can happen. We kind of talked about it already. But Chris, do you think the NBA lottery is a bad way to determine the draft order?
No, I don't. I've accepted it. I think the way they do the ping pong balls is a little... overdone.
It's like the lottery or something.
It's beyond impossible to figure out exactly how they choose it. And what they really need to do is put 100 ping pong balls in there. 14 of them say Phoenix, 14 of them say Cleveland, 14 of them say the Knicks, and so on till you get all 100 spots taken and the percentage is right. And then I would like to see them actually pull the ping pong balls out on the stage so that we can see the result. I don't like the fact that they do it in the back where nobody can see what's going on, then stick the names in an envelope and open them out on the stage.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of looks like potentially they could be cheating. Hmm. And when the Knicks come up with the first pick tonight, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Tony, what do you think?
Question?
The lottery. What do you think about the NBA lottery?
I like the NBA lottery. I like Chris, though, would appreciate if they did it in my face. So that way you can knock down all the conspiracy theories that everybody
just
always...
Just let us see it. What's the big deal? What do you do it in the back and then you bring the results out to the stage? That just seems odd to me.
More importantly, the Lakers are going to be represented tonight by Kevin Kuzminoff.
Ooh.
Kevin Kuzminoff.
Why? Yeah, weird.
I don't know why I said Kevin Kuzminoff.
It's not. Oh, I was going to say, what? That's so weird.
Hey, the Crushing Russian.
Crushing Russian.
Remember the Crushing Russian? Third baseman for the Padres.
I don't know why I wouldn't
say
Kuzminoff.
Why in the world he'd be doing that?
I saw Kuzma on the TV there, and I got excited. Kuzminoff came out my mouth. I don't know why.
So who is going to be the representative for the Lakers?
Kuzma is going to be.
Oh, Kuzma. Not Kuzminoff. An actual basketball guy.
Right.
Oh,
guy
that's
on the
sensible.
Team.
Oh, it's, right. What day is it?
It's Tuesday. It's still Tuesday.
Okay. Only Tuesday.
Okay. Kevin Kuzminoff happy to get a mention, though.
Yes, he is definitely happy.
Kevin, if you listen, shout out to you, dog.
There you go.
Number two.
Kyle is his name. First, I cannot. I've been trying to remember it for a long time.
I can. We can help you with that one.
Kevin Kuzminoff is showing up for the Lakers today.
What is in the water today? Oh. It's been a weird one. Jimmy Butler is not lacking confidence as he enters an offseason where he can opt out of his contract for next year. He says, quote, technically, I think, knock on wood, I will get a max contract anywhere I choose to go. So if you're talking a four-year, five-year, that is more than enough money anyway. I think I still have more than enough money now for my first deal, end quote. His agent explained he would be eligible to sign a max contract of 5 years and $188 million if he returns to the Sixers, but can make just $141 million in 4 years if he signs elsewhere. So, Tony, is Jimmy Butler worth a max contract?
Yes. I think he is. Philly doesn't get as far as they got without Jimmy Butler. This guy, if anything, he's proved that he's worthy of a max contract because of how he performed when it mattered most. I mean, this guy is talented, and I think any team would be lucky to have a competitor like that. Because he's one of those max guys that is willing to do, like, the dirty work, like the stuff that Draymond Green does for the Warriors. He's willing to do that, except he's much more of a scorer than Draymond.
Chris, what do you think? Do you think Jimmy Butler's worth a max contract?
I'd give him one. He's one of my favorite players in the entire NBA. So, yes, I do. I don't have to, I mean, for all the same reasons that Tony does, but I'm a huge Jimmy Butler fan. I thought Philadelphia would get all the way to the NBA Finals this year precisely because they picked up Jimmy Butler. That's how good I think he is. They came up short. Maybe because he got his ankle hurt with about 5 minutes to go in that game the other day. I don't know. But I think Jimmy Butler's fantastic. He does everything well. That's a max player contract guy for me.
Do you think he's back to the Sixers? Or is he
makes more
elsewhere.
Money there, right?
Yes.
You can't make quite as much money elsewhere.
He makes
one less year.
188 if he signs with the Sixers. If he doesn't, he makes 141.
Yeah. I think the Sixers would be wise to keep him. I'll just say that. I think they should do whatever they can to keep him if they want to stay in contention for an NBA championship, because I think they're a couple of years away from Embiid being mature enough to show up every night and win an NBA championship.
He's gonna be like 39.
Well, that could be, but I think that's what's holding them back right now. They certainly have the talent.
Not J.J. Redick?
And you know, it wouldn't hurt if during the offseason, Ben Simmons would just take like three jump shots.
Just three?
Just the whole offseason, just to at least pretend you're practicing. The guy... Don't get me started.
I won't be on him too hard because I don't know what it's like to shoot a basketball when your hands make it look like a tennis ball.
That's true, but you're professional.
So is Shaq. He couldn't shoot either.
Shaq didn't need to shoot. Shaq just needed...
Apparently, Ben Simmons doesn't either.
Ben Simmons is a guard. You got to be able to try a 10-foot jump shot.
It doesn't matter. Ben Simmons is going to become a Laker, and LeBron is going to become a 76er.
Knock that off. Don't even put
that
up.
That happens. That happens.
You'll eat your piece of paper.
Yeah, I'll eat another piece of paper, I guess. Yeah, that seems kind of old.
Number one.
I remember that conversation fondly because Coach said, are you going to put some Cholula on it?
He did say
he
that.
Did. I lost my place. Oh, there it is. The NBA draft lottery is about to happen. I just came across a rumor about the Knicks because let's just assume they're going to get the first overall pick in the draft. But Shams Charania of Stadium reports that the Knicks might trade the first pick to the Pelicans for Anthony Davis. So, Chris, would you rather have Anthony Davis or Zion Williamson if you are the Knicks?
Anthony Davis.
Really?
That's not even close.
You're going to give up your first pick to the second coming of Michael Jordan?
Anthony Davis was the first pick.
He was.
Yeah.
I would take a guy that's already established as a number one pick all-star over a guy who's not yet an all-star or even a good player in the NBA.
That's shocking to me. I really
thought. Indeed.
Because the Knicks fans are already buying their Zion jerseys.
Well, I'm going to need.
That's fine.
I'm going to need the Knicks to go ahead and do this. Because if they do it, that means the Lakers can't do it, which means they won't give up the entire team to get him. And I keep hearing, or I read yesterday, that those talks will be reignited before the draft. So I silently hope that the Knicks pull the trade off so the Lakers can't get him.
The old story is always that one in the hand is better than two in the bush, right? Have you heard that ever before? Do you know
yeah,
what that means?
I don't really know what it means, though.
Well, I'm going to tell you what it means.
Okay. Give it to us.
What it means is you take a player who's already good, Anthony Davis, over somebody who potentially might be good, Zion Williamson.
I get that.
Okay, well, then there's your answer.
Whoever gets Zion is going to sell a million jerseys, though.
Good for them. And
is that what the Knicks care about?
You mean if Anthony Davis goes to the Knicks, they won't sell any?
I think they would probably sell more jerseys of Zion than they would if Anthony Davis.
Yeah, because nobody has the jersey yet. So there's, of course.
No one has a Knicks Anthony Davis jersey.
But somebody has Anthony Davis's jersey.
All right.
So take that.
All right.
Scraby.
For data.
Yeah, take that for data. Boom.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
But joining us now on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, Spectrum Sportsnet's Mike Bresnahan joins us here. Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing well, guys. The lottery balls are going to drop in about half an hour or so, so we'll have a pretty good idea of where the Lakers stand in the draft after that. So kind of some anticipation here in the Spectrum Sportsnet newsroom, that's for sure.
But the 2% chance, so it's a long shot, but hey, crazier things have happened in this lottery, so who knows?
It is. Yeah, you're exactly right. There's a 2% chance they get the top pick, only about a 9.5% chance they move up to the top four. There's actually a bigger chance they fall a spot. There's about a 12.5% chance they drop from 11 to 12.
Oh, no, maybe, Tony.
I know. Maybe one of the teams below them vaults them or something like that. But you just never know. That would definitely reinvigorate some energy into the Laker fan base if they do get one of these top four picks. There's some pretty good players in a very top-heavy draft.
Mike, let's stay with the draft. The Lakers have been so focused on actually hiring a coach and putting a staff that there hasn't been a lot of conversation on the draft and who they may be looking at to take. What's the word? Who are the Lakers excited about in this draft? We know who the top four guys, but considering that the Lakers are unlikely to get to that spot, they're in an 11 spot right now based on the percentages and whatnot. Who is the guy that they're highlighting?
You know, a couple of the mock drafts have them looking at Bol Bol from the University of Oregon. Yeah. He was having a pretty good season until he got hurt right around the midpoint of it and had to sit out the rest of the ways. He's a big, obviously he's got some pretty good lineage with his dad being Manute, Bowl. But the Lakers need to decide, do we want to go for a shooter? You know, that was a huge problem spot for them last season. Actually, the last few seasons, they were 29th in three-point shooting when their season ended back in April. They were 29th last season as well. So they've really been having some trouble spots as far as getting the three-point shot going. And even that predated LeBron arriving.
Yeah.
You know that if they're sitting 11, there's a good shooter athlete there, then they might go with him too.
Mike, how did the Lakers couch the season they just finished? Because it was two different seasons. There was one before Christmas where they were really one of the better teams in the Western Conference, and they're knocking people off, and they were looking very much like not just a playoff team, but one that might even get a home court. And then, you know, LeBron gets hurt, and he's gone for so long that they just never kind of get it back together. So, assuming he's going to be healthy and ready to play next year, I mean, how do they kind of factor all of those things together in putting together next year's team?
Yeah, it's funny. If you talk to James Worthy, one of my coworkers here at Spectrum Sportsnet, and he'll just kind of shake his head and say, Christmas. That's when it started to end for the Lakers. And you're like, what's wrong with Christmas, James? What's wrong with you? And, you know, of course, he says, you know, that they beat Golden State that night by 26 points up in Oakland, but they also lost LeBron James for 7 weeks almost. So that was really the beginning of the end when he strained his groin just a few minutes into that third quarter. And they never quite recovered. You know, they lost really good positioning. They were fourth in the West after that victory, obviously in position to host a first-round playoff series if it held true for the next few months. But I do think defense and shooting is really the key going forward. Luke Walton always emphasized defense, and it happened in spurts. But they were at bottom half of the NBA in defensive rating this past season. And like I already said, God, three-point shooting is so, yeah. It's so many teams out there right now. They're just drilling threes. They'll have guys who hit four and five a night. And it's just the Lakers, in some of these games, you know, they'd be outscored by 24, 27, even 30 points behind the arc. And you just can't start a game down 27-0 like that, hypothetically.
Spectrum Sportsnet's Mike Bresnahan joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Mike, from the outside looking in, at least, it seems as though the organization had a little bit of dysfunction as it pertains to this coaching search. At first, you know, Monty Williams and Ty Lue come to the front as far as possible head coaches. Monty Williams takes the Sun job. Ty Lue negotiations break down. And they end up with, I think, a pretty good coach in Frank Vogel. How do the Lakers feel about how their coaching search ended?
You know, I think they're happy with the years. Obviously, that was a big deal. They were the coach for 3 years, not for five or anything.
Why was that, by the way?
You know, tied directly to LeBron's contract, especially when you're talking about Ty Lue. He lasted six games into this past season before he was let go by Cleveland. And the simple reason is because they lost LeBron a few months before that to the Lakers. So, you know, these coaches don't have much shelf life once LeBron leaves their franchise. Now, you know, obviously, down in Miami, Spoelstra kind of has struck that little theory down. He's withstood the test of time down there. But I think the Lakers are looking entirely at LeBron's contract. They want a guy to be here for the next 3 years. That's the duration of his contract. Actually, the third year is a player option for LeBron. So it might only be 2 years of LeBron, or maybe he really likes it here and he wants to tack on another year or two once the 3 years expires. So Lakers happy to get a guy to fill that three-year slot. Disappointment, I'm sure, a little bit on their part that they didn't get Ty Lue. It seemed like a really good fix, kind of a plug-and-play option. He and LeBron obviously very familiar with each other. Unfortunately, the Lakers don't have the all-stars surrounding LeBron like Ty Lue and he had back in Cleveland, but at least there's definitely a familiarity there with how to coach and motivate a player like LeBron James.
Talked a lot of NBA people about, you know, the free agent thing and everybody, you know, trying to make predictions as to where guys are going to wind up and the Kawhi Leonards of the world and things like this. And I personally, I'm surprised that I hear the Clippers is a better destination spot than the Lakers. I understand the Clippers were better than the Lakers this year. I understand the Doc Rivers thing and you know, they got into the postseason, had a nice, fun team. I just have trouble believing from this distance away that the Clippers would ever be a more popular destination spot than the Lakers. So has it really truly changed in Los Angeles, or is this just people kind of overreacting to what happened in the last couple of years?
Well, last I checked, the Clippers have never been past the second round.
Yeah.
And until that changes, they're still the Clippers, and the Lakers are still the Lakers. Now, you know, the danger here is saying, well, now, wait a sec. The Clippers, you know, they're young, they're fun, they're rebuilding, they've got some money to spend. That's what people said during Lob City that just ended a couple years ago when they had Blake and DeAndre and obviously Chris Paul. And again, they never could get to the conference finals. So you're kind of in danger, if you're a Clipper fan, of repeating history by saying, yeah, we're young, we're fun, we're going to get some good players. And it might happen, but I'm going to take the wait-and-see attack on that one, because, you know, last I checked, the Lakers still had 16 banners in their practice facility celebrating 16 hard-earned championships. So I'm gonna take a pass on that one. If you want me to take a hard pass.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, I agree with you 100%. It's just that I there's a lot of people we've had on, Tony, that kind of seem to indicate, well, no, the Clippers is a better spot to go to, and I just never, having grown up in L.A., I can't believe it. You know, so we'll see.
Yeah, and you know, they do have a coach who's been there. He's been entrenched there for several years, no doubt about it. And you know, they've got some pretty good young players, so you can't really, you know, throw dirt on them or anything like that. But can they land that big time free agent? I'll be curious to see if they can. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard has been rumored to go there for like 7 years now, it seems. But I'm gonna be very eager to see how those first few days of July shake down once the gates open on free agency.
Mike, how do the Lakers avoid the elephant in the room of Jason Kidd being on this staff with Frank Vogel? Because everybody's going to assume if the Lakers get off to a slow start that Jason Kidd is somehow in the waiting. How do the Lakers plan to kind of navigate that water a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know what the answer is to that. And the truth is, you know, Frank obviously knew that Jason Kidd was going to be part of the equation, or right, else he would not have agreed to do this. Right. There's no doubt in my mind that he knew about it going in, and he seemed okay with it. You know, 3 years and almost $20 million will tend to make a lot of nervousness go away. But I guess it shows you that how confident Frank is,
yeah,
as a coach. He doesn't seem too concerned about it. And the stories that are out there saying, you know, they hope that Jason Kidd can help Lonzo, who was a very similar player to Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was not hitting threes his first few years in the league. I think we all know that. And he turned into a pretty, you know, a fairly reliable three-point shooter. And Lonzo is under 30% for his NBA career.
Yeah.
His free throws are under 50%. Think about that, a point guard who's stuck in the 40 percentile range for free throws. And so someone needs to just kind of really take Lonzo Ball, still, you know, in his early 20s, under their wing, and Jason Kidd seems to be that guy. And as far as I can tell, Frank Vogel signed off on it.
Well, Mike, we got about 3 minutes remaining before you got to get in front of that TV to watch these ping pong balls. So we're going to let you get out of here. Always appreciate you coming on, and we'll chat again soon.
Great stuff, Mike. Thanks.
All right, guys. Great talking with you as always.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.